Hello, and welcome to These Are the Voyages, the podcast all about the futuristic, action-packed, warp-speed world of Star Trek, the original series. I'm Mac, and with me, as always, is Ben.
Hi, Mac.
Hi, Ben. This week, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 9 of Star Trek, Dagger of the Mind. This episode marks the first appearance of the Vulcan Mind Meld, which producers of the show created as a plot device, but remains
Mac,
one of the
Mac,
most iconic images
hey,
of the...
Mac.
Yes. Yeah.
This is Columboys. This is season 2, episode 4 of Columbo. It is also called Dagger of the Mind.
I don't understand.
We just watched it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. I wrote... Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Okay. Well, I guess it was like a little...
I mean, we can do the other one, but I haven't seen that episode in a long time.
I was really confused, I guess, when I wrote this, and I didn't have anything prepared for the fourth episode of the second season of Columbo, Dagger of the Mind. Well, I mean, of course, you know, it does star Richard Basehart and Honor Blackman. Basehart famously played Admiral Nelson on The Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, as well as Ishmael in the 1956 movie version of Moby Dick. Just thinking about it, like, Honor Blackman, best known as Pussy Galore in Goldfinger, of course, and replaced Dame Diana Rigg in the British series of The Avengers. I mean, just like thinking off the top of my head here, you know, the episode also stars Bernard Fox, owner and proprietor of one of the greatest mustaches in cinema history. Credits run from the Dick Van Dyke Show to MASH to Titanic to Darman Gregg, the guy who worked for, you know, years. I mean, this is not prepared in any way, but
Mac, it's okay. It's all right if you didn't have anything prepared.
I mean,
prepared.
I don't have anything prepared, but like just thinking about it, like this episode also stars Wilford Hyde-White as that incredibly British butler guy.
Right.
He appeared in over 150 separate roles, and
were they all butlers?
He was almost entirely butlers, but he was every role was more British than the last. Everyone I've mentioned except Honor Blackman, and I guess Leonard Nimoy too, is dead. But they leave behind them a legacy of guys who are insanely British, except for
Leonard Nimoy. Okay, yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm glad you're kind of back here.
I'm sorry. I'm in like a weird time warp, I think.
Yeah.
some sort of wormhole, perhaps. I feel like I've gone back to the original series myself. This is sort of a Trouble with Tribbles. You know, the episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
kind
of course.
Happening.
Yeah.
It's very back. Much. That's like a deep cut for nobody because no one listened to my first podcast.
That's not true.
That's true. Mm. You did. I mean, you were on it, so
well,
that doesn't happen.
There is also that. Yeah. Yes.
So, great goofs about things you can't. That's not even online anymore. You can't listen to that.
Yeah.
Just another thing that we're talking about that you cannot experience.
That's a deep cut
not
that you
available.
Will never understand. It's not even on the Pirate Bay.
It's not. Yes.
Yeah.
That not
You'll
even
never
pirate.
Get it.
You can't get it. It's no good.
It's in the vault.
It's bad.
Our vault's worse than Disney's vault.
Yes. That's saying something. Good Lord. Well, let's talk about this episode. I really like this one.
You know what?
I have to say.
I know we'll have to do a breakdown, but real quick, I'm going to say,
yeah,
I love the hell out of this episode.
This is a really fun, weird one.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's a departure from kind of what I have gotten comfortable with in the time that, you know, the little that I've seen out of the, you know, 69 episodes that we're churning through. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's be real. It's like we've been through over six of them at this point.
Yes.
You know, so we're definitely getting through. But like, yeah, it's different enough, but it's still, it's like this...
It's very. It's,
I'm stuttering
it's,
here, but
it's very Columbo.
Yeah, it's extremely Columbo, and it's in that pleasing way of like they figured out, oh, this is really the meat of it. We don't have to stick to like this particular set of beats.
Yeah,
like we got the feel for it.
It's
we can play.
It's very good. It's a lot of really good Columbo. It's a lot of him sort of failing to solve a mystery.
And
sort of going down blind alleys and but it's also a lot of him matching wits with the murderer. So we have two. Well, I mean, sort of. We have
One of them is technically the murderer,
and an accomplice. And an accomplice. So, right. So
Lillian Stanhope, played by
Honor Blackman,
mm-hmm.
and
Nicholas
Frame, played by Richard Basehart, mystery science theater favorite Richard Basehart.
You brought it up. So
yes,
which episode? What's he in?
Oh, he's not in an episode. No, but Gypsy, the character, is obsessed with Richard Basehart. Oh. She always yells Richard Basehart as a non sequitur.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
I understand why after this episode.
He's great.
Yeah.
They are a couple of
aging actors.
Aging actors, yes. They're putting on a play of Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
We're not actors, so we can say it. Macbeth.
Even if you are an actor, you can say Macbeth.
You can't say it because it's made up.
The superstition is just about saying it in a theater.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, you could get into more specific about that.
And isn't it also like a made-up superstition that like is just recently...
Always.
I mean, always. They're all made up, but whatever. There's this play. It's being put on by this rich lord.
Sir Roger Haversham.
Mm-hmm. And he is bankrolling the whole thing. And also the wife is sort of not having an affair with him, but she's sort of leading him on and making him think that there will be something. He like talks about when he comes
is
to...
It?
Yes.
Yeah,
he comes to confront her and he says like, oh, but all those times you conveniently had a headache. So like she's obviously kind of trying to rile him up, keep him on the hook, basically. And he finds out that the husband is in on it and has been like, he bought them tickets to go see a show together. And
right.
She said that she bought the tickets. So there you go. He finds out. He goes to confront them. The husband gets involved in this. There's a scuffle. She throws something at him. I have no idea what it is. It's a little white ball.
Yeah.
I'm guessing is made of like something heavy. I have no idea what it is. It's very
something
quick.
From right. It's so fast, and they never dwell on it. But it's clearly something from her dressing room that is from like in front of the makeup mirror.
Whatever it is, it doesn't come up again.
No.
So she throws that at him and it hits him in the head in such a way that he dies.
Right. Well, he's an older gentleman. And so it's just kind of led to believe like, oh, sure. That's enough to, you know, kill a dude.
Yeah. It looks,
later they
it
say
looks
brain
like a,
hemorrhaging.
Oh, that might, yeah. She got hit. Yeah. I mean, that can happen.
Yeah.
Don't
throw hard don't things
throw,
at people's heads.
Don't
Once
knock
again,
people out.
We do not condone murder.
That's right. That's the, you know,
no murders.
No matter what you see on Batman, it's not cool to just, you can't just knock someone out by hitting them in the head. Or
right.
if you do, they're dying.
They're probably dead.
It's not
right.
good.
Yeah,
it's bad. So they decide to put him in a trunk, move him to his house, make it look like he fell down the stairs
right.
and died.
And of course, they're terrible at all of this because they didn't intend to actually.
Yeah, this is in London, by the way.
Guy.
We should mention there. This.
Yeah.
A lot of this was filmed in London.
Mm-hmm.
All of the external stuff was filmed in London, except for the stuff at the mansion, which
the
was
mansion, which
very
is
very obviously Southern California.
Right. Super Southern California, not rural.
Yes.
You know.
Or not anywhere.
Not
England.
Rural England.
Extremely
yeah.
not England.
Nowhere anywhere near England. Not even in France.
One thing I really liked was the exterior scenes in London had that British film look.
Oh yeah,
like they had clearly hired British, like BBC, like film crews or like local film crews, because it all had that look of the 1970s film, like filmed
like
things
British
in and
film.
Around.
It. Yeah. No, for sure.
And when you get and that becomes even more obvious when you look at the stuff that was filmed in the U.S. like you can tell it's
the
just
moment the moment that they cut to like them driving up to the palatial mansion that
could not be more
that
different.
Sir Roger
you can tell it's
in.
On a different camera, a different film stock, like it's completely different.
And sound is terrible when they're shooting those exterior locations for the most part. Like it's definitely the sort of thing where they, you know, they clearly got a budget to go shoot on location.
Yeah, and the locations are not like they're landmark locations. Yeah. They filmed in the I don't forget what it's called, but next to Buckingham Palace, that fountain area.
They filmed
the theater. That's the exterior theater. That's right. Is the Royal Shakespeare Theater.
Yeah.
They film the wax theater. The wax works is
actually Madame Tussauds, right?
Yeah. All of these things, even though they're the real things, they all have fake names.
There's even fake signs on that whole bit with Big Ben.
Yes.
It's that old and it's only a minute slow,
And he said, and the joke that he says is, we must put another penny on the governor, which sounds like nonsense, but the governor is the part of the clock that swings back and forth that tells the time. So you put another penny on it and it changes the weight. Yeah. But I just like, there are a couple things like that, which are, there are like old timey sayings or things that aren't quite explained. There's a point where Columbo says that he's a visiting fireman.
Right.
Which, when I first saw this, I had to look up, and apparently a visiting fireman refers to, it's an old-timey saying for a visiting dignitary.
Hmm.
A visiting fireman, like, it means someone who is coming over from, like, another country, like a mayor or something like
London's
that.
London's a real old city, man.
Yeah. I just thought that was... Yeah. It's an interesting little...
It's like they really tried to pack all that in, and then they hired a bunch of LA actors with some pretty questionable accents
for the interior stuff. Yeah, for sure. A lot of the exterior stuff was real British accents.
Yeah.
Actors.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But it's one of those things of like when it happens, it kind of throws you for a loop a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you relax into, oh, this is really London. And then you hear this accent where you're like, oh, that sounds like me when I was a teen quoting Monty Python and now I'm ashamed.
Almost all the interiors, with the exception of the club.
Right. Well, the club.
That's very clearly an actual club.
Yeah.
So the murder solution hinges on the umbrella. There's
a mix-up with the umbrella.
He brought his umbrella. They grabbed the wrong umbrella when they were moving him out.
And the handyman
guy grabbed it. And so they switched the umbrellas.
Right.
And then
because
because
there's going to be a wax version of him right next to the wax version of them,
the
as
butler,
Lady Macbeth and Macbeth.
Of course.
Right.
Naturally. The butler eventually blackmails them because he figures out the thing about the umbrella, and they end up killing the butler and making it look like he was stealing books. And that's why he killed the Lord.
And then he hung himself.
And then he hung himself out of remorse or something like that.
Yeah, which is, I mean, props to the butler for, looking out for his livelihood and being like, hey,
the butler
you're
played
pay
by
me
Wilfred Hyde-White, probably the most British. I would say the most British
extremely
this, by far.
British.
He's very British.
Really nailed that kind of like
in a
gentleman's gentleman.
Yes, for sure. In the James Bonding series, they do a thing where they refer to someone as being who wins the British off, and I would say Wilfred Hyde-White wins.
Yeah, absolutely,
100%.
No one comes even close.
No. He's great. He's a butler. Interesting thing about that is while they were filming this, he was obviously in the Americans. Set. He was on the home because he was the butler. And he does not appear in any of the British scenes. And the reason for that is because at the time, Wilfred Hyde-White was a tax exile. He was a British national who refused to pay taxes. And so he could not go back to England or he would be arrested.
Whoops.
Yep. So that's why he appears only in the British or the
only in LA.
Only in basically. The LA area. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's a great way to lock up a career of always being the British butler, I guess.
Yeah.
If you're the most British dude in LA.
And so the umbrella.
Yeah, the umbrella reveal is basically right before they are opening the museum.
Right.
They bring over the two actors.
And then Columbo
talks about.
There is a fight that during the fight, the actual fight. The
Sir Roger
grabs the pearls off of
the stage pearls
off the woman.
Yeah.
And
off of
Lily's
neck. Yeah,
and they're scattered across the room. And Columbo theorizes that one of the pearls fell into the
Into the umbrella because Columbo noticed nobody ever ties them up because they have to dry off when they're inside. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And then it's revealed that there is a pearl inside the umbrella.
Right.
And then they confess, basically, and go crazy.
And then it's revealed that Columbo is actually very clever at misdirecting and flicking small objects
very long distances. Pitching pennies or you know, shooting peas.
Yeah.
So instead of waiting, taking chances, he put one in
because he knew that if they saw it, they'd fall apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good bit.
Yeah. I think probably the best part about this is sort of the evolution of Honor Blackman and Richard Basehart's
delusional
psychosis.
Yeah. Basically. So, and we should talk about that it's very obvious, like from the moment that they set up.
Yeah.
You know, the moment you see the exterior of the theater and all of this stuff, you very quickly go, oh, we're gonna walk in parallel with Macbeth. We're gonna walk in parallel with the degradation of their minds and their kind of that whole thing. Hmm. And I mean, you know, I don't know that I immediately
picked up on that before the episode started.
I just saw some similar use of Macbeth in other media, mm-hmm. and it's been on my brain, so it was kind of right there for me to pick up. And it's probably also that, you know, I used to do some theater stuff, so
sure.
That kind of, you know, it resonates in the, like, oh yeah, everyone kind of runs for this.
Yeah.
You know, if they bring up Macbeth in a thing, then usually it's because they want to, you know, focus on the, like, the kind of crushing guilt and the, like, seeing things and stuff. And they do the framing, like when they sneak in to switch the umbrella back with the wax statue and all of Sir Roger's possessions. Mm-hmm. There's like the sculpted bust of him already there, and she freaks out, and it's very much like the kind of, you know, the floating Duncan, you know, like the ghost Duncan, kind of thing.
Yep.
So, but I mean, they did a really nice job with it, and the two of them are, it's very fun to watch them get more manic and kind of slowly descend into this sort of crazed, you know, like, ha 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 ha, we did it, you know, like that kind of stuff. And then, yeah.
Yeah, we were watching this, and the person we were watching it with said, I can't tell if this is bad acting or...
or good actors doing an amazing job of being bad actors.
Yeah, and the answer, I think, is the latter. Second.
Yeah, yeah, it's sure. Absolutely.
There definitely were. They were making choices. This wasn't like just bravado. Like this was intentional. There are some very good, like, subtle kind of things where, like, at the funeral, she's like draped over the coffin and screaming and
bawling. And then they cut back to frame, and he basically rolls his eyes in that, like, oh, she's fucking overdoing it.
And then he comes over and, like, consoles her and is very sort of dramatic.
Right.
But then he does, like, they say, oh, just a picture. And he does this very, like, sort of subtle, you know.
You can see the shift in his mind as he, like, frames himself up for the picture to not be too unflattering.
Yeah.
But at the same time, still be authentic. Yeah. 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 There's a lot of that going on, and it's really fun to watch. And the other thing that's really fun to watch is they're morons. Mm. They're very bad at being murderers. Yeah. And it is really satisfying to watch, especially after some of the actual, you know, like, and that's the difference here is like, there's no planning in this one.
No, because it's an accident.
Right.
She definitely did not mean to kill him.
And just
he was going to expose them, and they were
and
going
shut the
and destroy,
whole thing
and
down.
And basically destroy their careers.
Right. He was going to end their careers. I mean, let's be real. Their careers were already over until they cooked up this idea to lead him on into doing a production of Macbeth and bankrolling the, you know.
Which seems to have been a very successful production. I mean,
it worked okay.
As hammy as the guy looked to me when they were doing the play sections.
Oh, so hammy.
Very hammy.
Yeah.
But from the reviews, it seems to have gone over rather well.
Right.
So maybe it just got better in rehearsal, who knows, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
it was more authentic after he'd lived through it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think that's what, I do think that's what they are trying to suggest to us in this episode is that, like, oh, because they've lived through this, like, it is resonating in their, you know, in their work on the stage a little more.
Yeah.
And even though they don't show us that part, I think it is at least suggested to us.
Yeah, the frame is definitely going a little more loopy. Like she's getting manic, and he's sort of getting loopy as it goes on.
Yeah, yeah, because he's the one who keeps quoting lines from the play,
right,
when they're in the middle of these ridiculous kind of, you know, dust ups trying to, you know, clean up their very, very messy tracks.
Yeah, and that's sort of how he goes out as well.
Yeah.
Is just quoting the tomorrow and tomorrow.
Yeah, as she starts yelling and, you know, and trying to get him to calm down, saying they planted it, and then,
Very much great performances, I think, all around. Great. I think that the inspector is also very great. Like, Columbo... You know, we don't talk enough, I think, about Peter Falk and how great he is, but he's
wonderful in this.
He's super great in this. He's like such a weirdo oddball, but like this is, I think, probably he seems very sharp in this one.
Yeah.
But like in a way that he doesn't always. Like sometimes he comes in and you just kind of see the bumbling, but in this one he just kind of moment to moment is like looking. Like you can tell he's got like laser focus on concepts and like linking things together. There's a couple scenes where he's like, there's that scene where they first get to the murder house and or the house where the kids
the murder house. I mean, it's not really the murder house. Yes. It's the
but they're looking around this place and he looks at the show poster and he looks across at a signed photo from Letty.
Right, and you can see him immediately make the connection.
Yeah. He opens a thing and like gets out the whiskey.
Irish whiskey, I think, says
the butler, and gives it a sniff. And that seems like he's kind of dicking around, but then a moment later he snaps in and he just says, "Why would he go downstairs
when he's got all this
when
stuff
he's got
here.
All this booze?" Yeah. That's like there's a lot of really good Columbo is investigating.
Yeah.
Like Columbo's not just dicking around, he's really investigating.
It's really nice because it feels like they let us in a little more on sort of his process in those things. And I think part of that is because we get that moment where he thinks he's got them.
Yes.
And, you know, again, it's with the umbrella and they check it before they've set anything up. And the two of them have already come in and swapped the umbrella out.
Right.
And that's the point where it feels like it is Columbo versus London.
Yes.
Like they have this moment where it very much feels like, oh, even Scotland Yard, you know, it's like, you know, even the guy that's giving him the tour, everyone's turned against him and his theory about, you know.
But he doesn't really have to go very far to get them back in his good graces.
Oh, not at all.
He just immediately thinks up a new plot and
it's not like all of you're the worst Columbo, never talk to me again. It's just the, hey, I mean, it was fun to chase an American's red herring for once, or an American's wild goose, I think is what
he
says.
Yes, he does.
But it's just that moment of where you think, oh, he's not going to get a lot of help from, and then of course, you know, they write over it, but like, but it's still like you have that moment. And I think part of them kind of showing us a little more of his is fun, but I do want to talk about,
they could have leaned into that a little more. I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. But there's really lovely work, after opening night when, everyone is backstage kind of saying hello and congratulating and flowers are everywhere. And he picks up some of the stray pearls and he says to Lily, you know, were these from the other night, you know, when you got in a fight?
Yeah.
And she just doesn't think and kind of answers. And then like you see it click in her, but they bounce back and forth between him essentially asking the same stuff of the two of them in their separate dressing rooms.
And they're giving the same
exact same answers. And then he calls them out on it. And it's just, it's all of those things where you can see like, oh, he very clearly, like the moment that he saw the Macbeth poster and her signed photo, you know, her headshot, he knew.
He knew something was up.
He definitely,
he definitely knew that there was something going on with this woman. He didn't necessarily even know who she was at the time.
Right. But it's very, like, you can see him kind of get on that very quickly. And it's really fun to watch him essentially kind of deflate them.
Yeah. I think it's a good example of him investigating in a way that we don't see. Cause I think a lot of times the thinking is done off screen.
Right.
And he comes back in and like tells you what he thought, or you kind of have to like follow along in your head and kind of try to be with Columbo, but not, you don't, this is the, like, you know, like a Poirot or something like that. They'll have their assistant and then they'll tell them kind of where I am. And this is probably a lot closer to that because it is actually very structurally very similar to a Poirot, who often was like a visiting detective and would come in and he just would sort of bumble along and be like, and
ask a couple of questions.
Yes, or... I see that this, I see that he has not taken proper care of the book to place it down. Why would he go downstairs? Like that.
Right, exactly. You know, just like that.
Just exactly like that. And then he twirls his little mustache. Mm-hmm. But this is a very, I think that this is a very, there's a mention of Agatha Christie, but I think this is a very Agatha Christie sort of story and formulation.
Yeah, but it's really good. It's a really very good episode. It's a great cast. It's a lot of fun. I know there's stuff. I'm trying to think of. I give me a moment.
Sure.
I'm just trying to think of some of the stuff that I really like. there was stuff that I wanted to make sure that I mentioned, like. Immediately, the first time we see Frame, he's hitting on the director's assistant.
Yes.
In a way that is just like, oh, you are a gross human.
He's gross, yeah.
And he does it to someone else, and he also hits on her again, where it's clearly the like, oh, you're a monster.
He's a gross guy. Yeah.
And
he's a murderer.
Oh, sure. Well, Lily's the murderer. And in fairness, when we are introduced to her...
No, he's a murderer. He murdered, what's his face?
Oh, you're right. They're both murderers.
They're both murderers. Right.
It's just that initially... He was the accomplice, not the murderer, and then he became a murderer as well.
Yeah.
But so, like, when we're introduced to Lily, like, she's basically being a petulant brat of an actor. Like, I saw that and immediately went, oh, I have known that kind of human. And it's awful to work with him. And I immediately felt sympathy for the director, despite his horrible outfit.
Hmm.
But there were things like that, that I really, you know, I just didn't want to like roll over. There's definitely that kind of, there's like a moment where they're telling him the same story where about, you know, what happened and that they fought and about how she hit him and he was like, and then I hit her back, you know, and like this kind of like very nonchalant where even Columbo kind of has this moment after, you know, some of the sexist shit we've heard him say.
Right. There's this part in a men's only British club.
Yeah.
And there's a very good bit where Columbo is trying to eat and the coroner comes in and keeps trying to hand him autopsy pictures.
Right.
And Columbo keeps trying not to look at them and so he can eat, which is fun. But there's also in there a part where he says, wow, this place is great. And the food cart guy goes, oh, why do you think we don't let the women in?
It's like, oh, I thought it's because you're misogynist creeps.
Even Columbo's like, ah, it's a little far from me.
It's not great. It's really not great. I mean, that's accurate as far as those clubs go.
As far as those guys were concerned. Yeah, absolutely.
But gross.
Yeah. I mean, those men's only clubs, I think, are still a thing in Britland.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are some men's only clubs. I get it. But, like, I feel like we wouldn't want to have women around here because they'd ruin everything is definitely not the kind of...
That's a very weird... I mean, I think that's the idea. That's the joke is that you, the viewer, are supposed to go, wow, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Or it's the 70s, so maybe the joke is like, haha, yeah, those darn broads.
We don't really know. And that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah,
it's weird. Because it is gross.
It's gross.
And like, and it could have gone either way.
Yes.
You know, as far as like the audience that, you know, was watching Columbo.
Absolutely.
But I think it was meant more as a like, London's different than LA.
Yeah.
More than anything.
That's right.
Still gross.
Still a little weird.
Yeah.
We're still dealing with the rich and famous.
Oh yeah.
But now we're the rich and famous of London.
Right. Yeah.
Sort of an American's version of London.
Oh yeah, definitely. So many of the accents are like almost caricatures of.
Yes.
You know,
several
British
of the,
accents.
Yeah. The main inspector who. It's fine, but then he has a sort of sub-inspector who has a very terrible British accent, and I thought he was American for a while, but it turns out he's Scottish.
And that's why
his British accent was not very good.
Right.
But
And then there's like the guy, the stagehand, Fenwick.
That guy's actually British.
Yeah. No, I wasn't bagging on his accent. I was just saying.
He's definitely cockneying it up.
They gave him like everything they could think to throw at him for like the British character actor role. Yeah. Just gave him everything, like, you know, shrapnel in the leg from the war, like the whole nine.
Mm-hmm.
They really just gave it.
Oh, yeah. He very much has a voice for animation. And he was in the Secret of Nim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, he's great. Like, yeah. I really enjoyed him in this. You have that moment where you're like, oh, they clearly needed to British this up for us.
Yes. Especially the interior scenes. They're like, we'll just throw as many like British and British-ish people as we can.
Well, it's that and then like idiom. And it's just everything where it's really kind of got that, like, I've seen British shows from the 60s and they maybe don't like harp on those things quite as much, but again, getting back to it, I think it's a very good episode. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely.
As much as I know, Mac, that you want me to talk for another 20 minutes about the clothing.
I'd love it. Nothing more.
I'm not going to.
Really?
Yeah. I will say, I mean, when it's shot in London, it's kind of great to get to see that sort of actual vintage, you know, clothing and kind of generally what people would wear.
It's very much like anything shot out. It looks a lot, you know, as a fan of Monty Python, you're definitely seeing that same. It's
you
that
have that same
sort
kind of vibe because it's the same era.
Yeah, exactly. You've got those like there's like that turban-ish kind of thing
like the kind of headdress / hat that women wear.
Yeah,
you know, sort of. Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of tan.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I'll say, if you get to watch it in any kind of fidelity, you'll get to notice that a lot of the ties you see on the men have texture. They're like grenadines, or they're knits with interesting kind of knit patterns, like diamond. I think. Sir Rogers, when we first are introduced to him, he's wearing a 3-piece herringbone like gray suit. It's a really gorgeous piece. And then the tie is like a knit, like a navy knit tie, and it has like a diamond kind of pattern in it. But there's a lot of really wonderful stuff like that. Fenwick, when we first see him, he's got a great like shawl collar cardigan on, you know, like in that very classic kind of workman wear sort of vibe, rather than the ways that we often see them styled now, because they, you know, get sold at J. Crew and Banana Republic and Gap and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, I didn't want to super dwell on it, because if I did, I'd just completely fall down that rabbit hole. Suffice to say, there's some real good stuff.
It's good stuff.
Particularly, but... Sir Rogers suit, and then Nicholas Frame's like kind of sport jacket that he wears a couple of times. That's like the tweedy sort of.
It's a lot of very. Yeah. It's a lot of very well tailored, but not too remarkable.
Well, and that's the other thing. That's the reason that I wanted to point it out. It flies kind of opposite of the American tailoring that we've been seeing in the show, where it's very much of the era, like you know, the 70s. You can see these huge giant lapels, and all of this stuff is, it's not entirely reserved, but it's just, it's so not out of place, even if you were to see it on someone today.
If you're wearing it today, like, you wouldn't really get looked at twice.
Yeah.
For most of the things.
And I think that's fascinating, you know, because up to this point in Columbo, most of that stuff has either been, oh, this is clearly something from, like, the 60s era of, like, very narrow lapels and kind of that Mad Men sort of vibe.
Or just fucking the 70s, out of there, like just fucking crazy.
Yeah, like we just opened up the, you know, the throttle and let it roll. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fantastic episode. 100% recommend it. Definitely in the top 10. I mean, we've only done 13 so far, but I would say definitely in the top 10.
The top 10 of the 13 that we've done?
I'd say top 5, actually, of the ones that we've... Yeah. I'd say...
How does it... I mean, again, you've seen all of them. Where does it slot for you? You don't have to give me a specific number.
Oh, I have no idea.
Generally.
I can't think of it that way. It's high. It's I like it a whole lot. Yeah, yeah.
It's a really fun episode.
I really
enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. Okay. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And Join us again next week for These Are the Voyages. We'll be watching the Corbomite Maneuver. It's the episode that stars Ron Howard's son,
Mac,
our brother.
Mac, just one more thing.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
This is Columboys, not These Are the Voyages.
Well, whatever. We'll see.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.